Hello, it's News Talk's Jess Kelly here. Before we get to this podcast, I want to talk to the business owners out there who know the value of having the right partner behind them. When it comes to empowering your business, Electric Ireland is the trusted energy brand that Irish companies rely on. As Ireland's leading energy supplier, they offer fixed price plans, expert advice and future-focused solutions, including solar power installation to support your business on its journey to net zero. Electric Ireland, making your business brighter. Visit electricireland.ie/business to learn more. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Late Breakfast. This is News Talk.
Now, this is Late Breakfast with me, Emma Oliver. It's great to have you along as we nudge towards New Year's Eve. People getting excitement. They've got over the Christmas backwash and now they're kind of getting up again for the next celebration before they head into the dark and challenging weeks of early January. A lot of people booking restaurants, of course, and looking at their food options. Very hard to get a table anywhere in the country over the next 48 hours. But here to talk about food, and particularly whether Dublin is now one of the foodie capitals of Europe, or at least getting there, is my next guest, who's Russell Alford, who is one half of the Gastro Gaze and presenter on 98FM. Russell, welcome into the studio.
Good morning, Emmett. How are you?
It's great to have you. So the cities I would name check would be Lisbon, Copenhagen, Bologna. These are the current hot names. You're not saying Dublin is among them, but you're saying we could be getting there.
I think I really do believe Dublin has a lot of potential to earn its stripes as a proper culinary destination. If you go back a little bit, you know, the international perception of Irish food is often that it's all
Guinness, potatoes, cabbage,
no,
bingo.
But you know, ham.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. Bacon. Yeah, Irish stew type of thing.
Nothing wrong with any of those things.
Absolutely not. And I would always be someone who says, yeah, no, we make really good things like that. We have so many other things. But our strength is in our produce, in our farms, in the food that is made and grown along this country. So you see it, restaurants often get a little bit of a slagging when their menus name check 101 different producers. To someone like me who's a restaurant critic, that's what I want to see. I want to know where my food is coming from, and I want to know that this amazing chef is supporting this amazing farmer, this amazing cheese producer. And that's something that I think is becoming far more prevalent, far more visible in Irish restaurants, not just in Dublin. But it's something that I always see is lacking when I'm in other cities. So I used to live in London for many, many years. It was kind of my formative years very much.
You're still in your formative years.
I don't know. The thing I sleep in doesn't always work. But very much like in those formative years of getting interested in food, being fascinated by food. It's a fantastic city. You can go to London and have an amazing time. But I'm always noticing that it's like, yeah, it's cooked well, but I can't tell if it's from a farm in Kent or if it's from Scotland or is it from France. We're very good at really showcasing that. And I think that's the strength.
But as you've got a very educated palate, I sense, even from the way you're talking, right? So you notice certain things. I'm just wondering, so when they say foodie capitals, is that the kind of place that will get the restaurant critics excited, but ordinary punters less so? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's kind of twofold. And a lot of this comes when you go on to a lot of people in their 20s and 30s are planning trips according to what they see on TikTok and Instagram. So they're trending places. Like we here at Marconi House, we are feet away from a pizza place called Bambino.
Yes.
It's a fantastic pizza spot. I might even get some for lunch today. But there's going to be a queue there.
Yes, all the time.
All the time. And it's very, very popular, and that's fantastic for the business. But that's a lot of that is driven by people seeing online that they can get essentially street food, have it on the street, have it very casually and be able to enjoy that. And we have other places in Dublin like that, and they're all in that kind of very fast, casual kind of sphere of things, from your pizzas to your burgers. So they're not bad quality.
You've but are you saying we're missing something at the top end, the Michelin end? Are we a bit thinner there? Is that the problem?
We are a touch. Now, we do have some amazing restaurants. I love the fact that the very first Michelin star in Dublin was a place called the Russell Hotel. It's very appropriate for my name anyway, back in 1974. But like, you know, going through the years, Thornton's, Gibbo's, Chapter One. In the modern day, you've got Variety Jones as well. All amazing restaurants. There is something at the higher level. Michelin has often been slagged off for kind of ignoring Ireland in a way. There was a period a few years ago when many stars went to Cork City, very, very deservingly, to amazing restaurants there. But they might miss out on other places. An amazing restaurant called Lignum out in Loughrea in Galway, my opinion, should have had a star years ago, but only got awarded it this year. But Dublin is going to host a Michelin ceremony in February of 26. So maybe we might see a bit more of a spotlight. Maybe we might see more restaurants being awarded it. But there's always a caveat when it comes to the Michelin stars, and I love to tell
people.
Yeah,
and a lot of the restaurateurs who've got it said it was a sort of a double-edged sword because
exactly.
The standard is so high, and to do it by keeping your cost base competitive is apparently very, very difficult.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, it's the Oscars for many chefs. Not all, but many chefs, that's the thing that they aspire to most. But within that, there's always this, and this is a tip I give anyone when they travel anywhere that has the Michelin guide. Check out this thing called the Bib Gourmand. These are a selection of restaurants that offer good value, ultimately, and good cooking with quality ingredients. It's a really good range of things. You can get really good value meals in beautiful restaurants. That's normally how
I was glad you brought me up to the value, because you're going to have a flotilla of people texting in saying,
yes,
this Russell chap, he's one of these sort of, you know, fine diners. You know, he's not like the rest of us. I'm just, you know, he's
hello,
been all these snobby places or whatever. But they'll talk about value and they'll say, Dublin won't become a foodie capital because it doesn't have the draw of a London or New York in scale terms. And then on top of that, you're then telling me I have to pay London or New York level prices. Mm. Well, what do you reply to that?
New York and London prices are not much more, you know, like I think we're batting in a similar field. Now, obviously, if we're going to talk about that higher end, which is kind of the perspective of can it be a proper foodie capital, you know, Dublin's batting around there. But even mid-level, you're still paying a very similar price whether you're in Rome or whether you're in Copenhagen.
You're saying value destinations are non-existent.
They're
really
very much, everyone's kind of undergoing the same issues, you know, whether it's energy costs, ingredients costs, farming costs.
Like I hear people say Greece in particular still has value.
Still. Just about. I have friends who visited Greece the summer just gone and they have started to see it creep up. Even Italy as well. Even Portugal. I visited Portugal, Lisbon in particular, a lot over the last couple of years. And while it is very, you'd feel good value, it is starting to creep up in terms of the cost.
And Russell, in terms of the destinations to go and dine, is there particular types of cuisine that are in right now? Sometimes it's Asian fusion, then it goes back to Indian, then it goes French. Where are we on that? And you would have your finger on the pulse.
I'm seeing kind of a bit of resurgence in good cooking when it comes to Italian food. Two places that have kind of opened up.
The Daniel Tucci effect, is it?
Potentially, and he's very influential like that. But if you look at there's two openings that come to mind at either end of the year, Lena and Portobello in Dublin. It's by the same stable of restaurants as Eto and Uno Mas, really amazing restaurants. That is just demonstrating some incredible Italian cookery, using great ingredients, beautiful setting, just there by the canal. It's a great place. I only ate there last weekend. And then the other end of the year, and this is a trend that we're starting to see happening a bit more in Dublin, is a group has come along, a big, you know, usually an American or an English group or whatever, the Big Mama group have just opened a Gloria Osteria on the corner of the College Green Hotel. They're in Westmoreland Street. Actually ate there last night. And
I know the life.
have to have the knowledge somehow. But it's doing, you know, it's very over the top. It's very dramatic. It's very, very much an experience to go into a very gorgeous dining room with really beautiful food. But we're also seeing a lot of places that are opening up on the basis, not necessarily of the food, it's of the vibe.
Okay.
Vibes are not a bad thing. You know, atmosphere in a restaurant can change everything. But the huge focus on the vibe. So this is the fit out of the place. How beautiful the restaurant is. How comfortable the chairs are. How stylish the chairs are. What material the menu is printed on. These are all details that some average people will, average punters will not necessarily notice, but they
and
may
Russell,
appreciate.
And Russell, we being the rest of us, those of us who aren't restaurant critics, right? And I obviously come from the business side, so I'm commenting on this from the economics of it. And lots of restaurants have gone bust, as we know, and the names get read out on programmes like this and so on. And we all say that is dreadful, and it is dreadful for the people involved. But is it sometimes the case that some restaurants just don't evolve and they've been left behind by the market? It's not because you know, the government doesn't like them or whatever. It's just they have, so, it, you know, to be something, the churn is just sometimes a somewhat natural part of the business.
It is. Like, I often say, like, with restaurants, at least, you know, often with, you know, shops or anything like that, at least you get to have a closing down sale. Often with restaurants, they just close.
Like, if you take Shanahan's, for example, I'm not again, but like, it's a steak restaurant. Now, are steak restaurants as popular as they once were? I don't know. Maybe they are, but I'm just saying. Yeah. It different tastes evolve over time.
You know, at the same time as Shanahan's opening, you know, you still have your FX Buckley and Hawksmoor, again, another English group that has come along doing very, very good jobs. There's at the more affordable end of the market, Buff and Freets and that group, they have opened up a number of different places around the city. So there's still a popularity for them. But when it comes to the quite often, I always try to say this very politely, often the people who run restaurants are often, if they're chef owners in particular, they're not the best business people.
No, they're chefs who've moved into management.
Exactly.
Which works sometimes and other times won't work.
Exactly. Like, you know, it just doesn't always work. And then sometimes it's a combination of things. It just becomes insurance. It becomes
My other question to you is, am I getting a sense that the superstar chef, the celebrity chef, the Jamie Olivers and so on, that you don't see as many openings of their places, or is that just my perception? So do people still want to go to a restaurant in the name of a particular chef, or do they go, no, that's a bit passé?
I think it's an interesting question, because you see it on both ends. You mentioned Jamie Oliver. You know, Jamie closed down famously a lot of his Jamie's Italian's restaurants over in the UK. They remained internationally, but he's reopening a number of them now, so there still is an interest. Because I'd say social media is probably the biggest teller of this. Chefs still become superstars, but they're becoming superstars in their own time. They're doing it at home. They're able to share. I see this particularly in and around. I follow a lot of Australian chefs in particular. I don't know if any of listeners are particularly obsessed with MasterChef Australia that's ever shown on Sky from time to time.
Well, the British one has had so many problems, I'm not surprised.
Exactly.
They're
so
switching.
They've
run out of presenters, right?
Exactly. Watch that one instead. But you see the fascination of these people who are at the top of their career, and they can just essentially be cowboy chefs. They can go off and make as much content as possible, get a very good income.
All you need is a tripod and, you know, off you go.
And a nice kitchen in the background, and you can do it. And this goes for everything from pastry chefs to ingredient, people who focus in on one ingredient, two ingredients. It is really fascinating, and that's where people are going. But then at the end of the day, a lot of chefs pure and simply just want to cook in a restaurant. They don't necessarily always want the airs and graces. But it's a double-edged sword, as you say. Much like a Michelin star, popularity requires maybe a little bit more of the chef as well.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to have to leave it there, because I know you have your own programs and you have to go and dine. You know, it's coming up towards lunchtime in a few hours.
Exactly.
So I'll let you go.
I got to get planning.
Listen, thank you very much. Russell Alford is one half of the Gastro Gaze and presenter here on 90LFM.
Late Breakfast. This is News Talk.
It's News Talk's Jess Kelly here. Before we get to this podcast, I want to talk to the business owners out there who know the value of having the right partner behind them. When it comes to empowering your business, Electric Ireland is the trusted energy brand that Irish companies rely on. As Ireland's leading energy supplier, they offer fixed price plans, expert advice and future-focused solutions, including solar power installation to support your business on its journey to net zero. Electric Ireland, making your business brighter. Visit electricireland.ie/business to learn more. Now, enjoy your podcast.